All right, fellas, welcome to the Horse Racing Happy Hour. Almost didn't get it out there. Saddle up to the bar for the next hour or so with Mike Gandolfo, Louis Ribeau, and our guest extraordinaire from the LA Times, John Sherva. And I'm very, very grateful. I'm very tired right now, by the way, but I'm very grateful to have John today because I'm going to tell this story, Louis, about why I'm so tired.
Yeah.
And I'm pretty confident that John will be able to beat my story. Are you kidding? Yes.
By the way, we have to dive in at some point. Hi, John. Thanks for joining us. John was the first guest we ever had on air once I joined the show, and that was at a Breeders' Cup in Louisville. And so good to have John on whenever he's on. John's wife has retired.
Oh.
This would be when she would be going back to school, and she is not doing that. We need to check in on the Sherva household to make sure both are alive, both have all their limbs, the dog is happy, all the things that are important in the Sherva mansion. And so we will get to that as we go. Tell us your story, though, Michael.
I went out to San Diego, as our listeners who follow the show listened and know, and I did not get to go to Del Mar, unfortunately.
Did you really go to San Diego then?
I did. Yes. I did. I'll tell you why. Because I saw a homeless man shoot up heroin and a naked homeless man. So that was San Diego.
That sounds
legit. Yeah, that's about right. I'll tell you what, though. They're not aggressive. Like, they're there, but they don't come up to you. They don't panhandle. I mean, it's not the ones I was around. John's giving me a face. I guess he's had a different experience. I don't know.
No, I don't know the San Diego homeless, but the LA homeless are some of the most aggressive.
No, the San Diego homeless, I think they're like, hey, listen, I'm in paradise. I'm good. Yeah,
they bust the aggressive ones to LA. Yeah,
I might scream at the wall for about 4 or 5 minutes and do a dance to music no one else hears, but it's okay. I am, and that's not me making light of mental illness, by the way. That's a real deal. I totally agree with that. Mental illness is a problem, but I left San Diego to come home yesterday at 1:15, and I got back about 2 hours ago. So 26 hours of traveling was my we flew. I'll say who the airline was because I don't think it really matters, because honestly, like, they did the best they could. I mean, we were on
I think Southwest. A lot of them were in the same boat. Yeah,
we were on a Southwest flight, and Southwest does this thing, like, we were going from San Diego to Denver, but they were gonna stop by Boise and drop some people off and pick up some other people, like, but we were not supposed to change planes. And we get to Boise and we're waiting, and I got like the prime seat. So I'm like all pumped because I got the exit row, got plenty of leg room. I'm good.
Yeah.
And the lady comes on. Good news is that Boise is beautiful right this time of year. And the bad news is that you're going to be staying here for a while. The plane is not flyable, and they don't have mechanics on the ground in Boise that they had to fly people in. So everyone's like scrambling what they're going to do. And I'm like, all right, well, my flight was supposed to get home and get into Louisville at 1 a.m. anyway. John's already like thinking of the story. He already has this beat. He's like,
yeah, the guy's covered Olympics all over the world.
Listen here, Junior. Let me tell you what we got going. I was like, I'm definitely spending the night somewhere that's not going to be my bed. And I ended up getting to Denver at about 1 o'clock in the morning that night, spending a wonderful evening in the Denver airport. 4 hours or so in the Denver airport. And then they got me on a 5:15 flight to O'Hare. And then I was supposed to board a flight to Louisville. And then plans were changed. And I wasn't even supposed to be in. When those plans changed, I wasn't supposed to be in until 8:30. So I was like, I'm renting a car. I'm out. Oh. So I just rented a car from Chicago and drove. Did I say O'Hare? Midway. It's Midway. But the funny part about that is I'm trying to tell my wife these plans. It's like, listen, they're going to get me to Midway. And she's like, well, they're going to get you Midway. Why don't I just come pick you up? Yeah. I'm like, why would you come pick me up in Midway? And she's like, and she kept on thinking that I was saying Midway, Kentucky. Like, I don't even know if Midway, Kentucky has an airstrip. Like, you know.
That direct flight from Denver to Midway, Kentucky.
That's right. That's good. So, yeah, so I'm a little, I am running on fumes. I've probably got about, I don't know, maybe an hour and a half of sleep in the last 26 hours. And
oof. Well, here
I'm here, though. I'm good, and it's going to be great. And we got,
well, John, how many Olympics have you covered now?
I've done 11. Okay. And my biggest travel delay was in Tokyo after these last summer games, where I had a 22-hour delay. Now, that sounds horrible, except the fact there was an airport hotel. So I was able to do that. But I will tell you, my trip back from Beijing after these last Winter Games is the Chinese made us get to the airport 6 hours early. And we got there 6 hours early, and then we're back. And the flight, this is for a 2 a.m. flight. At midnight, they shut, there was never any food or water. And at midnight, they shut off all the heat. And then so we had a 4 hour flight from Beijing to Tokyo, where we had a 10 hour layover, I'll be honest with you, I was in Los Angeles this past weekend. I was in for a wedding in Laguna Beach. My wife.
That's a humble brag, by the way.
That is an absolute humble brag.
Oh, that is a humble brag.
Laguna Beach,
100%.
What's the average sales price of a home in Laguna Beach right now, John Sherva?
More than I can afford. Actually, you know, I lived in Los Angeles for 23 years over two different spots, and I could
the
never
average Laguna that. Beach house price last month was $3.42 million.
There you go.
That isn't just a humble brag. That's an outright brag. So yeah, finish your drink, pour another one. We'll continue on with the show.
Yeah.
Okay, on with the show.
No, I want to hear. I want to keep going. You're in L.A.
Oh, I was my wife and I were there for a wedding of actually it's my Olympic tech. It's the guy that I do Olympics with, and cool. he was getting married, right. And we were there for 2 days and got up at 5 o'clock the next morning, drove to LAX, nonstop back to Orlando, no delay. Actually, we're a half hour early. I knock on wood, my travel lately, and I will say that I fly United. And I've had no delays since then. Of course, you know, my next flight for the Pacific Classic will be, you know, will be just a disaster.
You'll have to take a train from Albuquerque or something.
You get loyal to an airline. And, you know, I started at Eastern Airlines that became Continental Airlines that is now United Airlines. And I want to get to 2 million. I'm only at 1.8.
Oh,
and, I want to get to 2, but then again, I don't really want to travel 200,000 more miles, but it'll probably happen.
Yeah, well, I do need to say a shout out to the people at Southwest because, again, you know, I'd rather have the mechanical failure on the ground and not in the air, which is always preferable. And really, like, man, those guys at that ticket window when they had 175 people coming at them trying to having to make travel plans, having to book hotels, whatever else. They never lost their cool. They had a couple people get testy with them, but they handled it as well as you possibly could. And it took them about 3.5 hours to get through the entire line of getting everyone situated. But they handled it like champs. I mean, it was pretty awesome. So,
okay, here's a travel tip. Whenever that happens to you, don't go in the line. Call customer service of the airline. They can get you rebooked like before you even get to the front of the line. I mean, that's what I've done. I mean, I think one of the worst flights, another memorable flight I had was from Orlando to Los Angeles, where a person had a medical emergency on the plane and they had to land, and we landed in Midland, Texas. Oof. But the problem was that we still had so much fuel that when the plane hit the ground, it like broke one of the front wheels. So it's not like we could get back up in the air. And I immediately called, you know, the United rep, and I says, I want out of here. And they booked, and, you know, the passenger bill of rights, they put me on an American flight first thing in the morning out of Midland. And then when I got back to Los Angeles, I'm turning on the TV, and they're actually doing stories from passengers on the flight that I was on that are still stuck in
there. Still there, right, yeah.
Yeah, so always go to the phone first and see if they can help you.
All right, well, let's transition into a little horse racing right now, if you guys are good with it. So first segment here, we're going to talk about what happened last weekend, and we're going to start off with Hot Rod Charlie's amazing win over Olympiad. He just finished behind Life is Good, but that's okay. He beat Olympiad, and that's all that matters.
Before you roll it, watch Irad's ride down the stretch, because it's kind of controversial.
It's very Naira, yeah.
Go ahead, Zach. Well, let's go ahead and let's do it. Let's watch the end of the Whitney.
And they're coming for the top of the stretch. And it is Life is Good, the leader. Hot Rod Charlie now makes his run at the outside of Life is Good. So it's Life is Good. Hot Rod Charlie. Happy Saber has come through down on the inside. And Olympiad is next. And they're moving for the eighth pole. Down on the inside, it is Happy Saber trying to get to Life is Good. Life is Good now moves down to the inside. Happy Saber had a veer there. And then it is Hot Rod Charlie. And they're coming for the finish. It is Life is Good still in front. Life is Good is the winner by two lengths. Then Happy Saber.
Might have a beef. I don't know how. I might have a beef.
Might? This is the classic. Ortiz in New York. Even Imbriale says, ducks in, and Happy Saver has to veer out. Like, he describes it during the race because it's so obvious. Go ahead, John. I mean, this stuff. By the way, not even an inquiry, Mike. Not even an inquiry. Nothing.
I mean, that's... you would at least had an inquiry, but or a jockey objection, except jockey objections don't mean anything. You know, one thing I did hear about the race is the connections to Hot Rod Charlie. When they went to eat that night, they had seconds and thirds.
That's all they get. That's what they get. They get seconds and thirds. That's right. That's a good joke.
Pack horse.
Well, yeah, it's true, but he still beat the Olympiad. So there
hits
you
the board.
Go.
There you go.
He hit the board. But really impressive run there by Happy Saver. I mean, Happy Saver.
Yes.
But again, yes. That's another horse who's really good at finishing second, right?
Yeah, but frankly, I think the classic field is turning out to be a little bit better than we thought. Even with a horse like Happy Saver, who's right there, is Hot Rod Charlie going to be able to pull together, you know, sort of a special performance in the classic? I think we're going to have a pretty full field in the classic this year, which is pretty cool. Obviously, John's going to be out at the Pacific Classic to see Flightline go two turns. TBD on that. John, do you have an early sense of Flightline going two turns?
Yeah, I mean, he looked at his last race where he had the horrible start, and he just blew the field away. And John Sadler is really babying him. He's not certainly not over racing him, and it's hard not to see Flightline as, I mean, he's my current horse of the year. Now who's the 3-year-old horse of the year or male of the year?
Yeah, good luck with that.
Good luck, yeah. But Flightline is the top horse until he shows me that he's not.
I tend to agree with that. We'll see what happens on that one, though. All right, so then we had the huge upset in the test. Louis Matarea, I mean.
Oh, my girl.
I know. Oh,
bumped twice, couldn't get past. The rain fell right before this race. I think if it doesn't rain, she probably wins. But that is horse racing, my friends. But no, Chi-Town Lady. Man, I saw, I think it was David Aragona from NYRA puts out, or from DRF. He says, I think Chi-Town Lady is the worst grade one winner since, and he mentions another horse like 8 years ago. And I'm like, did he watch the Derby this year?
Yeah.
Like, did that happen? Like, what Rich are we Strike? Doing? Like, I don't know. Rich Strike. We doing that now? I mean, anyways. All right, Zach, you got the test horse.
Gained now into second and is going after Hot Peppers as the field heads for home. It is Hot Peppers and Matarea on the outside. Hot Peppers still in front. Matarea driving up on the outside with an eighth of a mile to the finish. It is Hot Peppers and Matarea. And here is Chi-Town Lady putting in a late run. Chi-Town Lady was last going up the back stretch. She is contending for the lead here with Hot Peppers. And it's Chi-Town Lady. And Saratoga is still
the lead.
There's another one where there's just obvious contact, right?
The graveyard of favorites. I do like that he pulled that out at the end there. That's a nice nice touch by John. Who's growing on me, by the way? Was not a fan of Imbriale at the beginning of the year, but he's growing on me. I like him as a caller now. Yeah, I mean, once in a while, you just – that would have to be a spot where you thought, if I'm going to maximize the pick six or the pick five or whatever, I'm going against Matarea. This is the spot I'm going to do it. And so if you had whatever that horse is, congratulations. That's terrific. In the same way that if you had Rich Strike in the Derby, good for you. But that's I think Matarea will be back over one turn, and she'll be just fine.
I know Louis is very interested in this. Kentucky's up 61-28 with 13 minutes to go. Basketball in the Bahamas. All right, there
appreciate
you go.
That. I got to talk about it tomorrow, so I appreciate it.
I understand. Yeah. On ESPN Louisville with Dan Nissel. All right, then let's go on to Warlike Goddess's great performance in the Glen Falls.
Warlike Goddess now making her move on the outside. Virginia Joy is in behind horses. And then it is Temple City Terror. And on the far outside, Flanagan's Cove. It is Key Biscayne, Warlike Goddess. Temple City Terror is right there. And looking to come on through is Virginia Joy. It is Warlike Goddess who has the lead as they come on for the finish. Warlike Goddess just loves these marathon events. She wins the...
Yeah, I mean, she's just showing it. And look, once you get to the Filly and Mare Terror for Breeders' Cup time, you're going to look at a bunch of European horses and you're going to look at Warlike Goddess. I think that's essentially where you're going to be. And so especially, you know, I'm trying to think at Keeneland, Mike, is it? It's probably going to be three turns for that race, I assume.
Oh, I think so, yeah.
And she just did that at Saratoga with no issue at all. So I think she's going to go in as the most likely American-based horse to win. So, yeah, I mean, no surprise there. Probably outside of Madureira, the other single of the day. And she came through. She just has such great kick after that amount of distance. And so,
John, I think there's a legitimate shot too, where the men's side of, or the open division of the turf is there's not really a male horse who is strong in that division that she might go against the boys.
You know, she very well could, and it's not that unusual to have a female horse run in the turf against the highest competition. So we'll just see, but you know, you still got to look to Europe first. I mean, you know, totally. Chad Brown kills it here in the U.S. and, you know, if he were to run with the same stable in Europe, I'm not sure where he'd be, but, you know, he's pretty strong here. And, but yeah, the turf, you just wait to see who's entered and, you know, it's going to be a full field and, you know, it's going to be interesting. And then we just see who wins.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be interesting because I think that turf division on the male side is as open as it's been. I mean, we've had some dominant horses there. I mean, like Breaks and Mortar and horses like that in the past. So, Louis, what do you think?
I would run her in the Filly and Mare just because I would feel more comfortable with the company. But, you know, we've seen in Enable, we've seen lots of horses like this. I'm not comparing Warlike Goddess to Enable. I want to be really clear. But, you know, John's point is valid in that this is, when you talk about especially either turf sprinting, we've seen like an Alexandra, that kind of level horse, come up, beat the boys in high level races. So it's certainly not unprecedented. But for me, I'm the guy that I'd rather run my horse in the Oaks. I'd rather run my horse in the Distaff if I have a filly or mare. And I don't know. Maybe that's just me loving those races and loving the fillies and mare careers more than I love the colt careers. But no, is she capable of running against the boys? The answer is absolutely, for sure.
What are you drinking there, Louis? I forgot to ask you.
I'm working on the Old Forester Statesman, which that Mike and I really like. It's a 95 proof, but it drinks more like 100-110 kind of proof bourbon. Really, really nice, really smooth, and one of the really, really good Old Foresters. We had a bunch of those last year. This is one of those remnants for sure.
And if you've been watching the show at all, most people would be able to guess what John Sherb is drinking. John?
Yes, I am drinking, the Kendall Jackson Chardonnay.
Oh, yeah.
Which brings me to the question. When I was in Louisville for the Derby this past year, to the liquor store next to the Kroger's, and they had like these Kentucky Derby KJ Chardonnays with like a picture of a horse on it for like $6 more. Of course, I didn't buy it. But is it just like they just changed the label? You know, and like who saves wine bottles? I mean, you know, so anyway, people, so I did not buy it. But if any of your listeners and viewers know if the a special Kentucky Derby KJ Chardonnay is any different, or if it's just like the Grand Reserve with a different label, I don't know. But and I'm not going to. I'm not going to pay $6 for it. Well,
I don't. The Woodford Reserve is no different, and the Woodford Reserve bottles, you know, it's just regular Woodford Reserve. So
my favorite thing about John is that he stays at a hotel next to a Mexican restaurant, and he drinks Kendall Jackson at the Mexican restaurant. I think that's delightful. So who saves
that? That is true. It's the El Nopal off of Zorn Road.
Yeah.
Is where I
71
stayed.
Right there. Yeah.
Pretty much every Derby I've covered, and I'm not sure, I think we're up to like 7 or 8 or something like that. And it's funny, when I came back this year, and I'm only there like once a year, because if I'm there for the Breeders' Cup, we stay at the Galt House because you get like a, you know, $200 rate. And right. When you stay at the Galt House for $200, why wouldn't you? As opposed to staying, you know, in a
at a Ramada, yeah, right.
Much lesser hotel during Derby week for $450. And I go up there, and the bartender remembers me. Wow. I mean, where do you get that anywhere else?
Yeah. Louisville, baby. Let's go.
Louis is a big fan of El Nopal, too. So he's not sad today.
Kids, the chips, they just bring them out. It's great. They all shut up and immediately.
Three different kinds of salsa, too.
All right, we got one more race to talk about. Let's talk about Nation's Pride in the win here in the Saratoga Derby Invitational. Louis, what did you think of Nation's Pride?
You know, this was the race where I tried to beat the favorite. We got not a huge price, obviously. Nation's Pride jumps up, beats Annapolis in this race. So we did get that at least. That was in green sheet for sure as my favorite. I'm against Annapolis, ran a good race. Zach, can you take us down the stretch there?
I don't think Zach's got this one pulled up just yet. So let's just keep on going. And then, but I don't think there's a big surprise there. I mean, I think we were all kind of talking about that Annapolis.
Two or three, yes. Yeah.
That, you know, on the class, kind of class side. I mean, Annapolis was coming up and stepping up in class. And so here we go. Let's look.
I think Annapolis was more about the connections as far as the.
Absolutely.
Yeah, go ahead.
On the far outside is Stone Age racing in third. Annapolis down towards the inside as the field comes off the turn and enters the stretch. And it is Classic Causeway. And on the outside, Nation's Pride, who is all out. Annapolis is now kicking in as they come down for the eighth pole. Here is Nation's Pride up to take the lead from Classic Causeway. Annapolis is third. They're coming on for the finish, and it will be the Irish Bread. Nation's Pride to win the $1 million Grade One Caesars Saratoga Derby.
By the way, the story of this race isn't Nation's Pride. It isn't Annapolis.
It's Classic Causeway.
They figured out what to do with Classic Causeway. That's right. This is a smooth, like straight, some like it hot brown type of horse. It's going to run the distance, but it's going to want to be out front. And that sets up so well if you're willing to do the distance and be the horse on the front that once in a while you just get out front, you stay out front. Do you win at 50%? The answer is absolutely not. But do you win at 25, 30%? Absolutely you can. And they're running Classic Causeway in serious high-level races right now. That's a horse that can settle into Grade 2, Grade 3 company in the coming years, can absolutely be a factor there. So, I mean, just kudos to the McPeak barn for figuring that out, keeping Julien Leperoux on that horse. He's given him a really fair ride every time he's been off. And by the way, if you're picking off, if you're hitting the board in Grade 1 million-dollar races, you're paying the bills too. So, that's the story here for sure.
I mean, he'd been almost like a joke after, you know.
No, that's right.
Until Kenny got him. And, you know, basically figured out what to do with him. So that's good. I mean, you know, you don't want your peak to be like the Tampa Bay Derby.
Right.
And, right. That's not good for breeding.
Well, you don't want to be White of Barrio this year is essentially what that is.
Yeah, right? Exactly right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Florida Derby winner. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, John, real quick, I just want to know, since you were in L.A. last week, did you stop by and pick up your paid license to cover the stable area at
did you get fingerprinted last week?
Yes. Well, that is called a segue into second segment here.
Look at you with your show sheet printed off.
Professional, let's go.
Hey, when Louis does the show sheet, I look at it because you know I don't want to be surprised. Yeah, basically what happened is, and it caught us all surprise, or caught me by surprise, is the CHRB on. Let's see. Today is Tuesday.
That's the California Horse Racing Board.
California Horse Racing Board.
Yep, yep.
Sent out a note that journalists, the media, would need a license, which means that you would have to be fingerprinted, you would have to have a background check, and you would have to pay $75 for the privilege of being able to go on the backstretch and do your job. A little background here is that I have been chair or co-chair of the Associated Press Sports Editors Legal Affairs Committee for 20 years. These are fights that I have been fighting. I have been doing this for a very long time. I've been in rooms debating with former Commissioner Paul Tagliabue, with Bud Selig, with David Stern.
I think that's definitely a humble brag there too. We're going to throw that up. Like all the major commissioners of sports. And, you know, it's like having the four families at the Godfather, in the Godfather there with John Cherva. So go ahead.
I'd love to get off on that too, but that's for a different, because actually I'm going to. Okay.
Let's do it.
Yeah, go. That's why we're here.
Divert here. I view racing's four families, you know, which are CDI, Churchill Downs.
Yes.
TSG, Astronic Group.
Yes.
NYRA, New York Racing.
Yes.
And TVG.
Yeah.
But what the, and we're going to use the phrase organized crime, because I did watch the series, The Offer.
I know. I haven't seen it yet.
It's fantastic.
Yeah.
It's absolutely fantastic. It's Albert Ruddy's journey to make The Godfather.
Yes, yes. I'm familiar with that part. Yeah.
And
Mike looks like that series. Yeah, here I am. Yes. Yeah, yeah.
And the organized crime families can get together and figure out how to work together to make it all work. But in horse racing, the four families cannot do that.
Correct.
Nope.
They cannot do that. And that's probably why it spells the, you know, eventually, probably when we're all gone, but, you know, the end of horse racing. Okay. Segue back to the topic of, anyway, I've been negotiating media access rules forever. Which is, I guess, why I've been on that committee or chair of that committee for so long. And when I saw this thing, I'm thinking, okay, I can go to an Olympics in Russia, in China, or in Salt Lake City or in Vancouver without being fingerprinted or background checked. But I can't go to the backstretch of Del Mar and interview George Papapodromo without being fingerprinted and having a background check. And so
that's a take,
the NTWAB, which is the National Turf Writers and Broadcasters Association, sent a letter. And then I sent a letter from the Associated Press sports editors under our president, George Rojas, his name and my name and my co-chair, Jerry Ahern. And I wasn't sure how it was going to go, but I was working diligently in the background. I hadn't done it yet, but I was going to contact Diane Feinstein's office because I have a good relationship with them. I was going to contact Gavin Newsom's office. So I don't have as good a relationship with them, but I have a relationship with them. I had also, to use a congressional term, I had already whipped four votes in our favor. Of the seven commissioners on the CHRB, of which I know most of them pretty well. And, but, you know, the thing in these kinds of situations is I really believe it's important to let the other party have an easy exit. I don't want to embarrass anybody. I don't want it to make anybody look bad. I want to give them the opportunity to have an easy exit from whatever dumb situation they put themselves in.
You're right.
And Scott Cheney, to his total credit, he's the executive director of the CHRB, California Horse Racing Board, immediately saw that this was probably a mistake. And within 24 hours, it was reversed into something that said, well, the tracks will now submit the names, not for approval, but just for informational purposes only, who is being credentialed. Fine with that.
Okay.
It never became a big national story. And frankly, it would have. I mean, we would have made it that.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I don't have any idea what role I played into it other than as a, you know, someone that was involved in it. But the credit goes to Scott Cheney for seeing that maybe this was totally unintended consequences. You know, when he did it, I'm sure he didn't give it a second thought, but, oh, this would be fine. But, you know, you don't do that to the media. Not that any of us are afraid of fingerprinting or background checks or anything like that. You know, I've got nothing to hide, but you don't ask the media to do that.
Fingerprinting and background checking is for people taking care of animals, not for people covering the sport.
Right.
I mean, that's the difference.
And I will amend that slightly. I do allow background checks when we have our reporters covering the Little League World Series.
Oh, okay.
That makes sense.
I think that I'm okay with that.
That's reasonable.
I'm good with that.
Yeah.
So, but anyway, it was a thing that was over in a day. So,
well, let me just throw this out there, just because, and I understand where we're Louie and I, you know, kind of are like, listen, I am not a journalist in the sense that you are a journalist. Louie is a little bit more of a journalist than I am because you allowed him to be for, I don't know, 6 months or whatever. But
talk on the radio every day.
Listen, I've done that too. Maybe not every day, but I've had my show. So, at the end of the day, you know, I mean, was there some part of like, you know, there's more podcast people who have not been classically trained journalists who are popping up in sports media all over the place. You know, is this a way to kind of even kind of control that influence? I mean, I think it's taken a while for Louie and I just in repeatedly showing up and being there and whatever else. But at the same time, like we realize that our path and your path are completely different, you know? I think we provide value. I mean, obviously we have a great listenership and we appreciate that. And we're finally starting to make we have a presence, I guess, Louie, is the best way to put it without trying to be braggadocious whatsoever. So, but you know, I mean, really what stops someone else from saying, hey, I got a podcast, I want a media credential, and you know, and
the place putting the event on. I mean, that's the gatekeeper of these things. John's point is more, let them be the gatekeeper rather than the CHRB imposing rules on how to gatekeep that way, right? Is that fair to say, John?
Yeah, I'm okay with Santa Anita, Del Mar determining who gets credentials. But you know, on day one of the horse racing happy hour, I don't think he should have gotten a credential.
No, I don't know if we would have. Well, we would have because we did it actually. That's a story for another time. I guess we could tell people kind of how the podcast came about. But yeah.
But on the 6 month mark, when you've proven what you are,
right,
what you do,
right,
you're not a student.
I agree with this. I agree with you.
You know, I mean, it's you are covering horse racing and in a very significant way, and yes, you should get your credentials.
We should also join the National Turf Riders and Broadcasters, like we've talked about forever, Louie. We got to make sure we get that done.
Yeah, since they just did this in California at tracks that I really love, yeah, we should probably get that done for sure.
And you know what? And Flatter and I will help you do that.
Well, yeah, we know that. Yeah.
You need two sponsors. And you know, you've earned it. You guys have earned it. And you've done nothing demonstrably stupid. So,
well, I haven't.
whoa, I agree. By the way, the birthday episode 5 weeks from now, folks, tune in.
Oh, is that the shirtless episode or
that's a shirtless? Hey, John gets it. Okay.
You know, I basically just listen to your show.
You don't watch
my
the
favorite
video.
Part of that is getting the text from Kevin Kirstie, and I'll be interviewing Kevin tomorrow. Is Louie shirtless?
Yes
sir. We're birthday, in our birthday suit. Let's go.
So but yeah, no, I think you have to prove it. You guys have certainly proven it, and I would you know, definitely sponsor you for the NTWAB. But you know, somebody in their basement who maybe not even doesn't go to the track and just know. And I know that's a cliche, you know, somebody that lived in their parents' basement.
Well, the second part though, that doesn't go to the track, right? That isn't interested in actually being a participant in the sport. Yes. No, that's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
No, I mean, you guys have proven it. You know, you're one of the top podcasts in horse racing podcasts in the country.
In the world, John. Just want to clarify that real quick.
and I will tell you that I did watch you once when I was in China, so that I could give you your China, you know, check off as somebody in China actually watched your show.
Well, thank you, John. I appreciate that. I wasn't trying to like.
So
I wasn't looking
for
a
50 countries
like a
around the
face.
World, not 51.
No, actually, it's just John. John talked about how much he travels. He's been to all those countries. He just listens whenever he goes to a different country.
John, John mentioned something that we talked about last week, which is what's going on at TVG, and I think that it's underrated, frankly, the role of TVG as far as broadcasting, commentary, who the personalities are, where they are, the tracks that they promote, frankly, in the sport. It's a really important outlet that way. We had our guy Matt Rybaltowski on last week from US Bets. I am a huge fan of his. I think he does an unbelievable job at US Bets. He actually mentioned this podcast in his last article, which I appreciated. John, I mean, you're an LA Times guy. TVG's out in LA. They are on site, Santa Anita, Del Mar. That's their thing. You know, what is your sense of where that's moving? We talked about fixed odds last week a little bit. I don't know if you have any opinions on those things.
Well, you know, it goes back a little bit further when Fox bought 25% of Naira Bets. And then suddenly Naira isn't on TVG anymore.
Right.
TVG is not, you know, it's not the everything about watching horse racing on TV. And then, of course, Churchill Downs sort of piggybacked into there because they're still part of the HRN contract or something like that that keeps them off TVG1, that puts them on TVG2 and all that. So the thing with TVG is it has become a 24-hour infomercial. And, you know, with Todd Schrupp playing the Ron Popeil role, and that's a little dated reference for some of you, but
everyone just drink. I don't know why everyone just drink. That's the oldest reference I think we've had on this show as far as media. So just go ahead and drink.
Well, I might be the oldest guy you've been on this show.
You don't look older than Flatter.
Oh, sheesh. Ron's going to crush me on Saturday. All right, there you go.
I am, but not by much.
Okay.
You know, it's almost like TVG has – they're really all about pushing people to make bets on their TVG app. And I got an email just recently from a reader who said, you know, do they actually make those bets that they do?
What a great question.
And I said, actually, they make bigger bets. You know, their bets are usually under $30 or under $40. And I know a lot of these guys, and they're bettors, and they're not buying $40 tickets.
Nope.
They're not. They're
that $36 pick four is not what they're playing. That's right.
Yeah. No, that's no. Right. So, right. You know, so I think to say that they're not, obviously something, you know, when you get, you know, Scott Hazelton picking Woodbine from Los Angeles. Yeah, no, he's not betting that. And that's not to pick on Scott Hazelton because I think he's very good.
He is right.
But, you know, they're forced to make picks that they, you know, for races they wouldn't bet because, you know, the dumbest thing a bettor can do is bet every race.
Oh, my goodness, yes. Or every, you know, sequence, or, oh, it's Del Mar season, so I have to bet the early pick five and the late. No, you don't. No, you don't.
Yeah.
No, I pick the one that you like. Yeah, that's right.
You pick the ones you want.
Yep.
But you notice that all their bets are horizontal.
Yeah, of course.
Because that way they keep you watching. And that way you can see the ads for super glue or the prostate the prostate enhancer.
It's pronounced Gorilla Glue.
I mean, Gorilla.
What are we doing? Yeah. I mean, why are we even here? I mean, no, you're totally right. By the way, my pick five in the green sheet this week is $144 because I think that's what's gonna happen at Churchill Downs. And they're gonna run it. They don't. I give them credit. Yeah, there's Mike. So here's the joke, John.
It'll pay $147.
There it is. All right. He's still here. There it is. All right. But no, I, you know, that's one of the best things that's happened to this show is that I've gotten to do these picks for Green Sheet, and they're like, send in whatever you want. I'm like, well, I think we should play Louis Picks Winners. The
5 out of 6.
We should play. Thank you. But we should play just in Indiana instead of doing the cross country pick five or whatever it might be, right? And so, no, they've been really supportive that way. But
yeah
no, I hear you, John. It's an interesting dynamic too. I thought Matt did a really good job of talking about the intersection between that sports betting crowd and the horse betting crowd. How to, you know, the you know, even when we talked to Matt Dennerman a couple of weeks ago, who's the track announcer at Golden Gate Fields, the attractiveness of the fixed bet to someone who's coming into horse racing that doesn't want to bet a horse at 3-1, and they get to the gate and they're 9-5, right? That kind of thing. And so I, you know, Matt's opinion was whatever gets someone into the sport, you know, as long as it's legit, I don't care. I kind of have the same thing. We had someone tweeted into the show, and if you're listening now, I appreciate it, that at Monmouth on Haskell Day, they had literally half a dozen booths set up that were the fixed odds booths. and then all the other ones were the pari-mutuel booths, and so you could choose between the two. And frankly, to me, as a gambler, that's attractive, right? Because if I like a horse and the fixed odds is 3-1, and they're down to 5-2, 2-1, 9-5, whatever it is, man, I'm heading for that fixed odds. If I know I'm going to get 3-1, that's great. And so, no, it's an interesting conversation. I worry with FanDuel and that influence. You know, I just met with someone at an OTB here recently, and their sports betting is way up, but their horse betting is way down. And so they're going to jump on as a sponsor of this show to try to get their horse, you know, their horse numbers back up. What people forget is, even though the rake is better on horse racing, 15%, 16%, 20%, whatever it is, man, if someone loses a sports bet, it's 100%. It's 110%. Right, that's the difference. That's what we're up against in horse racing. And so I think we need to play up the fact that you could bet a race every 5 minutes, that even if you're at Churchill for a day, you can make 8-9 different bets, 10-11 bets based on the number of races, whatever it is. Play that up rather than waiting for a football game for 4 hours. That's what we have to advertise, I think.
You know, betting is, we all know, it's all about the action.
Yep.
That it, you know, what's the famous expression, you know, you know, I hope I break even. I need the money. You know, it's that way. Is you probably don't remember that they introduced Hi-Li into Las Vegas many years ago. And I love Hi-Li. I mean,
one of the best betting sports ever. Yes,
it's so skilled. It's such a skilled sport, but it died because it was only every like 10 or 15 minutes you could bet.
Right.
And when you're in Las Vegas, you know, it's every 30 seconds, it's every minute and stuff like that. So, you know, those are all some of the factors that come in there. But I think your point about sports betting, for a casual person, for someone who's not addicted to the action, the fact that you can make a bet that's going to last 3 hours, that's kind of attractive.
Yeah. All right, John, I would hate to let you go without asking, you know, so – Mike and I'll be out there Saturday at Churchill Downs for.
If I've woken up from my long travel day yet, then I'll be out there.
Mike's gonna sleep off the day tomorrow. I've gone to a lot of Arlington Millions in Chicago. It's one of my favorite days to attend. There's nothing like Chicago in mid-August, weather wise and all those things. Arlington as a track, I'm sure you know, and is just one of the great. It was almost like a UFO landed in Chicago, in Arlington. It was this beautiful horse track, right? I have mixed emotions about it being here. I will go ahead and preface your comments by saying, I would rather the races be run here than not run at all. I understand why people are upset, and they are absolutely in their right and right mind, frankly, to protest them being moved here. Because of what happened, what does John Shriver say?
Okay, you guys know who the Menendez brothers are?
Yes.
Yeah. Menendez brothers were the kids who
we opened with the Menendez brothers.
killed their parents. Okay. Churchill Downs, you know, basically bringing up the whole idea of ballyhooing the Arlington Million at their track is akin to the Menendez brothers asking for leniency because they're orphans.
That's the best take I've ever heard about anything. That's the best take I've heard about anything, ever, about anything. That's sports. John's like, oh, I can't really get into sports talk radio. That's sports talk radio right there. That's it.
Okay.
That's it.
Okay, Louie. Tomorrow on your show with
yes.
Dan Issel, I
yes.
dare you to bring up that comparison. You don't give me credit. You can claim it yourself. Unless that, of course, that will get you thrown off the radio.
It will not. Issel likes that stuff.
He does like that stuff.
He does.
He really does. That's true.
It's all about it.
And I'll just also say, too, that
he's also more of a Keeneland guy than a Churchill guy. He actually said to me out loud, John, on the show.
He doesn't like Churchill.
Keeneland has history. What does Churchill have? And I fell out of my chair. Aristides, nothing. Is this what we're doing? I mean, I fell out of my chair. It was incredible. We got so many text messages. Thank God from our listeners. Like, is Dan being serious right now? That Keeneland is historic, but Churchill Downs isn't. Oh, it was so great. No, Menendez brothers. I've been calling it faux Arlington for a long time. I called it fake Arlington in front of John Dooley, by the way, who called those races. Our guy Ron Flatter called for him to call these races. I think the clean break needs to happen. I think Travis needs to call these races. I think they shouldn't call the Arlington Million.
I want to rebrand it.
They should rebrand it. It should be the Mr. D forever. It should be $1 million. Mr. Duchessois and he was so important in racing. You know, it's interesting, John, that you feel this way. I don't know if you saw these opinion pieces. One of his kids even said it was because of the laws of gambling in Illinois that Arlington's going away. I really don't know how true that is or not, but I think if they set up slots at freaking Arlington, I think they're still running this race tomorrow or on Saturday, and I think I'm on a plane on Southwest to Midway. Speaking of Midway, I think I'm
not Midway, Kentucky.
Not Midway, Kentucky, Chrissy. But no, I think I'm up there. I think I'm still doing it. I think if they have slots, I think it's not even a question.
Churchill is not a racing company. They're a gaming company and a real estate company.
Of course, like the Stronach Group, yes.
Like McDonald's is a real estate company.
Nas, you know what? If CDI owns Santa Anita and all its land value, do you think that track would still be running?
Yes, because the late pick five garners like $3 million on a Friday. Yes. Yes. Because they get that takeout in California. The takeout in California is like 73% or something. Yes, of course. Yes. Yes. I absolutely do. Yes.
I think CDI is a real estate company. But we can disagree with that. And also, too, let's also remember how Churchill has done such a great job with its turf course, too.
That's here legit. Here it goes. No, that's legit. It was Ellis that ran four straight turf stakes on Saturday. And I just remember thinking, no problem. We're good. Like, no problem. Breakdowns of Saratoga. Yeah, that's a bad thing. Ellis, no problem. We're just going to run four straight Kentucky Downs preview turf stakes in a row. And I was like, must be nice. Must be nice. No, for sure. Someone showed me a picture of Atlantic City's abandoned track. Man, that turf course looked nice. Not going to lie.
I'll go different. I think Churchill's always going to – they're always going to look and see if the squeeze is worth the juice. And, I mean, that's a business decision. Is the squeeze worth the juice? And I don't think Arlington holds any historical value in horse racing. So if it goes away, it goes away. It is not a major league track. It is a triple A track.
Double A
track. If it goes away, it goes away. I mean, it is what it is. And if the squeeze isn't worth the juice, Churchill does what's best for their investment and best for their stockholders, and they move on.
I mean, but Churchill as the Menendez brothers. I mean, that's next level. I mean,
Well, and to your point, Louie, like just
I've never been that creative in my entire life, and I've been married, four kids. I mean, like there's nothing in my life. I mean, that is a remarkable. I mean, that's
I like what you said. I mean, if that's what it is, just own it. Just own it. Say like it's going away.
Yes, you know? That's the part that I would say. Yeah, rename it. Call it the old Louisville, the old Louisville Million, whatever it is. Whatever, call it after the neighborhood. Call it the Campus Million, whatever. I mean, whatever you want to call Churchill Downs. But
Are you against them even having the special day at Churchill Downs?
I was going to say.
Okay.
John, are you against them continuing having the race? Should they have, like, conceded all of those graded stakes to other tracks, like the Naira, which is running five horses per graded one?
Well, I mean, it's hard to move it to, like, Hawthorne, which I think has a 7/8 turf course or whatever.
I think it is 7 furlongs. I think you're right.
When the Hollywood Gold Cup moved to Santa Anita, they called it the Hollywood Gold Cup. Then they called it the Gold Cup. Then they called it back the Hollywood Gold Cup at Santa Anita. I wouldn't mind just, the Arlington Million at Churchill Downs.
Mm.
I'm okay with that. As long as they come up with the money and do all that. But
You didn't answer my question. Would you rather the race go away or happen this weekend?
I'd rather the race be kept.
Okay. All right. That's fair enough. Yeah. But in a better, in a more, a more deferential way. Is that fair to say?
Right. But again, it gets back to the point of, you know, like eating your young. So it's,
I just listen. I think the location of where that track is terrible. I mean, it at the end of the day, it's hard to get to. It's not something that
Arlington.
It's not like it is like
you get on the Orange Line anywhere in Chicago. You're there. This is a bad take, and I want you to extrapolate. Go ahead.
It's out in the freaking country.
That's where the Bears are going to move for that reason. The
Bears shouldn't move out there.
They're going to crush out there.
I think the Bears should never move out there.
You're out of your mind.
I just, you know.
Soldier Field is hard to get to. Arlington Park is easy to get to.
But Soldier Field's like, it's part of that shoreline with, you know, with Navy Pier and the Field Museum and all that stuff.
All those things are a pain in the ass. All of them. All of them. Field Museum.
I lived in Chicago for 7 years, and I never found getting to Arlington to be a problem.
Yeah. Ever.
But
ever.
Do they draw?
It's the easiest thing ever.
But from this standpoint, you had to intentionally go there. Is it something that draws people?
Oh, I'm not arguing the economics. You told me it's hard to get there. Those are different things. It is very easy to get to Arlington Park. And by the way, you'd get on that train, and it was people dressed for the track on Arlington Million. I know that because I stayed with a friend in Wrigleyville. We would drive to a small, like, little Orange Line offshoot to go do it. From a location standpoint,
I guess what I meant to say, it's not like something like it's constantly in your face where you're like, hey, let's go to Arlington today, where you would just make the decision to draw more fans. Like, you have to, like, you would have to be a horse race, want to go to Arlington that day. It's not something that's just, it's in your neighborhood and you're going to end up at Arlington.
Correct.
But people in Chicago want to go to Arlington. Because you don't want to go to Hawthorne and
win. Obviously, not enough, John.
Huh? Oh, I disagree. No. I think the combination of the value of that land plus the gambling laws in Illinois led to the sale of that place. I think those two things together. I think that's what ended up happening. It's a weird case of middle ground that we usually don't have in the chatter about sports. But to me, it was. Land's worth a lot. The Bears will pay a lot. And on top of that, you know, people only wanted to go there if they were beckoned to go there, essentially.
All right. Are we saying goodbye, Mr. Sherva?
Well, yeah. You are getting into Russian novel length here at 52 minutes.
It's okay.
We only have one handicapper on the show. We'll be okay.
Yeah.
Well, good to be with you guys.
No, John, we love
it. We always love having you, John. Anytime. Actually, I just hope, like, in the future, like, we don't even invite you, just pop up on the show.
That'd be great. Yeah, for sure.
That'd be great. That's what I want to have happen. So, all right. We'll see you. See you later, John.
Take care. Right.
John Sherva with the LA Times, drinking his Chardonnay, his Kendall Jackson Chardonnay, and enjoying the racing at Saratoga.
I don't even hate on that. Like, a guy that grew up in Chicago, hated the cold weather, moves to California, wants the white wine. You know what? That's sticking to a motive. That's sticking to what you want to do. The Menendez brothers thing, by the way, that was heavy.
That was brilliant, by the way.
That was heavy.
I thought the four families, you know, like saying, like,
he's right about that too.
The four families of the Godfather movie could get along, but you all can't. Of course, you know, they did off everybody at the, but
he didn't watch Godfather 2 apparently. Yeah.
or the end of Godfather 1. So.
Or the first one. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. I think we should move on to picking some winners for our friends at Green Sheet Racing, because they are so gracious in sponsoring this segment of the show and giving my good friend Louis Ribot a voice. And by the way, if you haven't seen it yet, like, make sure you go download the sheet, greensheetracing.com, but really pick one up at the track. I'm loving, Louis, how our logo just freaking pops.
It does right pop. And I want to say to the people that listen to this show, you know, talking to John and the guys over Green Sheet, y'all are showing up.
Yeah, you are.
Y'all are showing up. Keep showing up. We appreciate it.
So greensheetracing.com to get your picks for the weekend, or if you're at the track, they might be selling them right on site. So there you go. Get out there and get your green sheet. All right, let's Louis, let's get going. We're going to talk all Arlington Million Day. We're not going to do any four-star Dave. We're not going to do any of this stuff. We're just Arlington Look,
five
Million
horse,
Day.
I mean, five-horse field and the four-star Dave. I think Mazin's the pick there. Keep going.
Okay, there you go. That's all. That's the four-star Dave, all you need. So we're going to start off with race five. What is the sequence you're going to give out in the
– The green sheet's the late pick five at Churchill. This is not part of it. It's the end of the pick five, the early pick five at Churchill. Cool thing, different parts of the country do takeouts differently. At Churchill, if it's a pick five, the takeout is the same no matter what, early or late. And so we're going to talk about the late pick five. But the Beverly D, which is race five, is going to end the pick five here.
Okay, so which pick five are you giving? What sequence are you going to give in green sheets?
You and I will talk races 7 through 11.
But that's not what you're doing in green sheets, right?
Yes.
Oh, you are. So like you.
Green sheet is 7 through 11.
Okay.
But well, Beverly D is a grade one, so we're absolutely.
Oh, I knew that. Yes, yeah, we're going to talk about this. So this is not part of Louis' pick five pick, is what Louis was trying to say. Race five. Sorry. Grade one, Beverly D. Mile and eighth on the turf for fillies and mares. 3-year-olds and up. And we have, I think, a superstar in this race. Louis?
In whom?
I like Rogier.
I totally agree. I think Rogier is definitely the Rogier. Top horse here. I love – so I want people to notice. For months, I've been saying, Chad Brown really trusts Manny Franco. He is sending Manny Franco to Kentucky to ride this horse for this race. Definitely on top here for me. I then have Family Way in the second place here. That's the two horse, Tyler Gaffalione and Brendan Walsh. The two of them, for the two of them, mediocre numbers here, high teens in the win rate together. But this is a horse that finished right behind Bleecker Street by a half length in the New York at Belmont. Was right there with Warlike Goddess in the Grade 3 Bewitch. Those are grade one horses. That's a horse that can absolutely jump up here. And Princess Grace is my third horse here. Florent Giroux, Michael Stidham is just a winner. 7 wins and 11 lifetime starts, 10 times hitting the board. She's won over $1 million. She's a five-year-old mare. They bought this horse for 10 grand.
Wow.
You talk about horse of a lifetime. That's what Princess Grace is here. And so I am 4, 2, and 3 in the shorter field here, but frankly, a very quality field in the Beverly D.
All right. So is there any concern, though, that Rogier's had a little bit of struggle since coming to the United States? I mean, we've got one grade three win, has not been able to get that grade one win yet. Any concern with that at all?
I think that's a legit question. To me, when you look, you know, Lily Pons in this race, the five, this is, you know, for Aiden O'Brien, 20% in you know, first time in North America. To me, putting this horse in this race rather than racing in Naira in New York, I think is a wash. Rogier, to me, is showing that 90-plus buyer speed figure in every single race, has been running in grade ones, grade threes. To me, has shown more class than the other horses here.
Okay, so there we go. Now, on to this pick five. We're gonna skip race six, and we're gonna get into the pick five that starts with race seven, and we're gonna go with the Lady Tack 6 furlong sprint on the dirt for fillies and mares, 3-year-olds and up. $200,000 purse here, Louis. Who do we like in the Lady Tack?
Look, I think this is a Bell's the One Sconson match race, and so Sconson's gonna go out front and try to do.
I mean, by the way, how many times are we gonna see this at Churchill Downs where it's Bell's the One?
Sconson? I hope for 100 more years. That's what
because
I
really it feels hope. Like they've been racing. Like they were on the undercard when California Chrome won the Derby. I mean, it feels like.
So Bell's the One is 6 and Sconson's 5, and they've been running at each other forever. And Sconson, Sconson's one of Mike's early, she's going to pick up the pieces, horses that we've had on this show. I think the two of them, the one and the two, are going to go ahead and pick up the pieces. It's either that Sconson goes up front, wins, or the Bell's the One. Mike, I've been around this game, not as long as other people, but they're. She's as good a closing sprinter as I've ever seen in my life. And so I am 1 and 2 for horses. Bell's the One, 4 for 10 lifetime at Churchill. Sconson, 5 for 9. Give me those two horses in the Lady Tack.
Okay. And any chance that we see the probably more likely either the three or the four horse step up and beat one of these two horses at all?
I think the step up is a tough ask. Joyful Cadence, the 3 with John Ortiz, the trainer, did run a really, really good race in the winning colors at grade 3, right behind Sconson. I think that's the point, though, is right behind Sconson. She's that kind of horse. She's not going to win by 1,000 lengths. Do you remember when Maxfield was running and he'd run a mile and a quarter and win by half a length every time?
Mm-hmm.
Sconson's kind of like that. She'll run the one turn, and she's not going to blow anyone out. That's just not the type of horse she is. So to me, Joyful Cadence is right there, right behind. Ray LaGuardiere is on board. 14% of Churchill Downs this year. It's a good question, but no, to me, it's 1 and 2.
I'm actually thinking it could be Love Me Some Me, because Love Me For Me has hit the board. All four starts at Churchill Downs, 1-3 of those starts at Churchill Downs. Taking a huge step up.
I was going to say an impressive step up from the optional claimer level. To me, that's a go against in my book for sure.
Well, and I would agree with that, but I think, you know, we're getting to the point where Sconson, well, Sconson's only 5, but Sconson just feels like she's been around freaking forever.
I get it. Oh my gosh. She's some 9-year-old gelding or something. Yeah, I get it.
Yeah. All right. Let's do a real quick pick here on race 8, which is main special weight, 7 furlongs. I had a very interesting conversation, by the way, Louis. One of the people that is one of my friends for this conference, I was out in San Diego, his name's Jim Ponte. Jim is a huge fan of horse racing. Him and his buddies, he's not in the best health in the world. He's getting up there in age. Him and his buddies are getting ready to go to their annual trip to Saratoga for the Alabama. Nice. He's all pumped about it. So Jim, hope it was great seeing you last week. But Jim was talking about how he loves betting specials, these main special weights, and he's figured it out, man. He's figured out how to look at these breedings, and these are his races. So who do you like in this maiden special weight?
This was my go against the favorite race of the week. And so I'm going to try to beat the 8 in Grave, who's a 3-1 favorite. To be fair, if you're looking at a race and the favorite's 3-1, that's a lukewarm favorite. Almost in any race. I'm going to take the coupled entry of Scratch Off the 1 and Appeal Denied as my favorite here. I actually think Appeal Denied is a better horse here. Has run one time, gets Florent Giroux in the saddles, ran a 73 buyer first time out. If you go back and watch that race, the horse is kind of like, oh, yeah, we're running. Oh, crap, it's a race. And at the end, surges for fourth place. Beaten by less than 3 legs. My sense is Appeal Denied second time out. If he breaks well, will win this race. The 1 in this race is 5-1. That's a really, really attractive price. So to me, that's the horse I'm against. I do have the 8 in the second spot, and then it went 7-2 in this race as well.
All right, we're gonna move on to another kind of quick pick here with race 9, an optional claiming.
Why don't we skip this one altogether? If you want it, you can head to greensheetracing.com. Oh,
look at you! I like that. All right. Well, you know, it's on the surface, so just read what's on the screen, Burgundy. So that's fine. All right.
That's
we'll
the
move
thing,
on.
By the way, and I want to be really clear. That's a spread race for me as well. The 8th and the 9th are both spread races. If you want to find out what I felt in the 9th race, go ahead to greensheetracing.com.
Then we're going to end it with the two stakes races, the Fort Leonard, as I guess is how it is. It's a mile and 3/16 on the dirt for 3-year-olds and up. And this is, of course, we're going to see Mr. Wireless.
Yeah.
I'm a little upset that we're not seeing my boy riding him.
Which boy? Deshaun's been on him, man.
Deshaun's not on him in this race, is he?
Yeah, of course he is. Deshaun Parker on Mr. Wireless, of course he is.
I'm looking at Horse Racing Nation. They have
don't do that. I sent you the PPs here.
Yeah. Deshaun's going. So I'm going for Deshaun right here. We love Deshaun. Is Mr. Wireless going to be the one who pulls it through?
To me, not. I think that Team Fury is the horse here. 3-for-5 at Churchill Downs. Lifetime best 98 speed figure at this track. If he gets back to his form, he wins here. I do have Mr. Wireless in my second spot here. I do think this is a race where you need to be a little bit careful, or my third spot. You do need to be a little bit careful and cover some spots here. Brian Hendricks Jr., Joe Sharp, they're keying up on Twilight Blue. This is a listed stakes. Twilight Blue has won twice and come in second 4 times out in 2022. This is a horse that, to me, is a Churchill Downs specialist. And so to me, you have to watch that horse. So I landed on it's Fort Leonard. 2, 5, and 3 at the Fort Leonard.
Does Deshaun have other mounts, do we know of in this?
Of course he does, yeah.
Oh, good, great. All right. Yep. So look out for Deshaun Parker in this meet. So all right. So then
especially in those maiden races and different things, he has a really you're totally right, Mike.
All right, we're going to go on to the Arlington Million. Of course, Louis already talked about his love affair with the Arlington Million. This is
That's fair.
the grade one turf race, and we're going to see one of our favorite turf horses that we saw race Derby weekend. I don't know, was it 2 years ago, I guess? Was that when we saw Set Piece for the first time, or 3 years ago?
The first time you and I were on Set Piece was the...
Wasdan, right?
Yeah, that sounds right.
And yep. two in 2021. So it was last year. All right. This feels with COVID like it was 2 years ago. and he was incredible in that race. I know you like Brad Cox. I know you love Frenchie. 4-1 on Set Piece, man. I'm loving that price.
Yeah, so go ahead and bet on Brendan Walsh and Tyler Cavalier and Santon. The
six. Right. I was trying to set you up for the field pass. All right.
I appreciate you. He's not in my picks at all. Smooth Like Straight is the four. Doesn't do anything but run 100 buyers. If someone's going to get out front and stay out front, it's going to be Smooth Like Straight. Set Piece, man. This might be the horse that brings you home in a very serious way at the end of the day. I'm 6-4-1 in the Arlington Million. Set Piece is 4-5 lifetime at Churchill. The issue is, and Mike, you could back me up on this, I don't know what this turf course is.
Nope. I don't think
I don't know what this turf course is. So the reason I put this ticket together is you have a Smooth Like Straight who's going to get out front. Does he stay out front? That's the question. I don't know. This is a one time. This is a one off. The more you can spread in this race, the better. Think about a horse like the 7 Admission Office. 5 wins lifetime, 19 runs. Won the Arlington, which is the prep for this race, at the beginning of June, right? Beats Get Smoking, beats Field Pass in that race. Can he return to form and do that again? I don't know. That's the question. To me, the spread race of the sequence, believe it or not, is the Arlington Million. If you can do that, go ahead and do it, because I think the fact that they literally put two turf races on hiatus instead of running them tells me that this turf course is a little different than the average turf course. Even if it's firm, it might act a little differently. To me, go ahead and spread as much as you can, but I still landed 6-4-1 in the Arlington Million.
Yeah, I mean, we don't know because they stopped racing on the turf and they made some adjustments to what happened. We've had a lot of rain here recently.
Yeah,
it's not going to rain this weekend. I mean, I don't know. It could sprinkle. It's not going to be a situation.
Man,
where
Saturday is supposed to be like mid 80s.
83, 55% like, humidity.
Yeah, like.
Oh, that
like,
that was the other thing. I was out in San Diego, and. You know, it's 78 and like the humidity is probably like 40%. And people, I was like, hey, I thought I'd see you. A friend of mine, I was like, hey, I thought I'd see you this morning at the dog park because our hotel's next to this dog park. And she's like, oh no, it's way too hot and humid. Too hot and humid. I was like, man, I must be like abusing my dogs then, I guess, for the stuff that
right,
they go out
no,
in.
Kidding.
Yeah, but I'm going to be very curious. I mean, I think most people are going to be watching to see how this turf course performs. I mean,
I agree.
And it's
that's the thing too with the early pick five. You know, I give out those picks for the Beverly D. If you wanted to get creative in that race, I don't think it's crazy to think that the turf course is going to be a little, you know, unpredictable. That's why I'm picking a closer against, you know, a front runner and then a stalker. I think, you know, trying to pick out a couple of those because I simply don't know how it's going to play.
All right, well. It's going to be a good day of racing. It's going to be a great day to be out there, have a single barrel cigar, get your green sheet, you know, maybe have a cocktail or two and just enjoy the day. I mean, with that weather, Louis, I'm going to try really hard to get out there. I think it's going to happen.
You literally have nothing else to do.
That's not true. I have a lot of stuff to do. I have a little girl who's getting ready to leave for college in less than 2 weeks.
She wants nothing to do with you. I mean,
ouch. Oh my God. Oh, I mean, the truth bombs are just coming out. Man, that is hardcore. All right, Lou, let's pay the tab. Let's get out of here. Thanks for listening. This has been the Horse Racing Happy Hour.
Closing time. Every new beginning comes from some other beginnings. And
yeah.